It's our 1320 Kings Insider and host of the Locked On Kings podcast. Our man James Hamm here as the marathon continues. 60 minutes of commercial-free sports talk on KIFM West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento, ESPN 1320, always live on the free Odyssey app with Dylan McKC here. Hammer, we were talking earlier, and Kenny was pretty emphatic about this point. They've got the Memphis Grizzlies tonight. The Memphis Grizzlies are obviously not very good. Ja Morant is not going to be a part of what they're doing. Is it important for the Sacramento Kings to get a win? Like, even if you lose 27 of 28 or 28 of 29, is it important to have that one break up two potentially long losing streaks?
Oh, yeah, I totally think it is. Like, these guys need a win so bad. You know, Doug needs a win so bad. It's just to feel better about yourself for a day, you know, to not feel like the weight of the world is like coming down upon you and to sit here and, you know, set dubious records all the time. That's not fun. You know, like when you're watching two teams on Thursday night's loss to Orlando, two teams set franchise records. One of those hits, it's a franchise record, 27 threes. The other one, a franchise record, 15 consecutive losses. Like that, it just hurts. It's not fun for anybody involved. So I know they don't like deep down the franchise itself, like as a entity, doesn't want to win a bunch of games down the stretch here. They want to develop young players. They want to, you know, they want to preserve their spot in the draft lottery and all that. But at the same time, like you don't want that culture of losing to just permeate through your system. These young guys specifically, they need to know that there is a way to break through and to actually find success and to feel like you accomplished something in a game. And, you know, it's fine that you're scoring more points or you're grabbing more rebounds. But at the same time, there has to be like some sort of carrot to dangle in front of these guys. And that is, you know, victories. And you're hoping that, you know, one of these games they figure it out. And again, I know the pro tank camp is heavy here in Sacramento right now. But also keep in mind the Kings have 12 wins or 12 in what, 46 on the season. And they're three games behind everyone else. Like, and some of these teams, there's no way for them to already catch what the Kings are doing.
They've all but got that worst record in the league locked up.
They do. And there's a big difference between being the worst team in the league and being the second worst team in the league. And I know like the lottery gods have not shined upon the worst team in the league and given them the number one pick during the last, you know, what, six drafts or whatever, since they switched up the system. That doesn't mean that it won't happen this year. Everyone has the top three have like a 14.5% chance of landing the number one overall pick. The key is though, this is a really good draft, and I don't want to put a number on it exactly, but once you get past the number five pick, it becomes a little less stable, right? And so if you're looking at a super heavy top three, but then you have these other kids that are showing up and saying, I'm going to be the fourth pick or the fifth pick, you want to be, if you're the worst team in the league, the worst selection you can have in the draft is the number five pick. And that means if four teams jumped ahead of you, which would just be like horrific. But if that does happen, you still want to be as close to the top as you can, because, you know, whether it's Wilson or it's one of these other guys, like there are players here that you can land at the number five pick that can really change the course of your franchise. Maybe not as much as number one or number two, but certainly, you know, there's potential for them to be frontline starters, all-star level players, and that's what you should be striving for.
Speaking of the draft, we had a discussion last week, just a real hypothetical, about if one of the teams late in the first round, say that whoever has the number 22 pick, called up and said, hey, we'd like to inquire about Keegan Murray. And we're willing to give up a first round pick this year to get Keegan Murray. We'll make salaries match however they need to. But the real prize there would be getting back into the first round. It would cost you a guy like Keegan Murray. Would you be open to a deal like that? Or is Keegan Murray like, nah, this is a guy that I want to have here to help build around?
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I wouldn't. I mean, it would have to be like a top 10 pick for me to move off of Keegan. Because, you know, there's a reason why Keegan Murray has so much value around the league. And that is, number one, untapped potential. But number two, even if he is who he is, he's still a really good basketball player, and a player that, you know, really good teams, championship level teams have these 6'8", 3-and-D wings. Again, maybe his 3-point percentage isn't where it should be right now, but certainly a player that can hold down a position, play 36 to 38 minutes a night and give you a whole bunch of stuff. So I like Keegan as a player that I would build around. But I also, one of the other features to Keegan is he's just about to start a 5-year extension. Mm-hmm. Like, you have him in your building, and the Kings are going to look different today. They'll look different next year. They'll look different the year after that. But we're talking about 3 more years after that. What do they look like? And you're hoping that eventually this team does turn a corner, and that Keegan Murray can be a big part of that. And Keegan Murray in his prime can be a big part of that. Got him under contract. He's happy where he's at for right now. So I would say I'm not trading him unless it's realistically, you know, probably like 8 through 12, I would potentially listen. But even that, I would still be a little hesitant, because what are you going to have to take back as well? Like, are you going to have to take back bad contracts? Or are you going to have to take bad players? Like, it's a little bit more complicated than just a straight swap for the 22nd pick.
Have you started to really dive into the draft yet? I mean, I know we'll have a conversation coming up in a few minutes about AJ DeBonta and Darren Peterson plays tonight, and those are the ones and twos. But have you started to dig into like a 3, 4, 5? Have we started the Locked On Kings top 5 prospects for the Sacramento Kings yet?
Well, I haven't started writing it down, but I'm watching a ton of college basketball. So, you know, again, I think Darren Peterson is like one of the most intriguing prospects we've seen in the last like decade. Again, we're talking about a ready-made, like, walk off the street and be an all-star level player and a player you can build your team around. But my top 5 is pretty set as of right now. I love DeBonta. I've watched a ton of DeBonta already. Just the joy and the energy he plays with is, you know, it's crazy. I think Cam Boozer, I'm a little leery on Cam Boozer because he's just so plodding. But the next two guys for me are Kingston Fleming and Caleb Wilson. So I think, you know, Kingston Fleming just keeps jumping off the page to me. And I want to compare him. I hate doing this, but he feels like De'Aaron Fox if De'Aaron Fox really, really wanted to be a superstar. And, you know, again, like, some of it's a little blocky, but he's fast, he's long, he's athletic, he shoots the 3. And when he's on the court, he's diving. He just is so engaged in every single second that he's a player that, again, if you end up with the 4th pick in the draft, I would be totally fine with the Sacramento Kings ending up with him. And, you know, the same with Caleb Wilson. I think Caleb Wilson's got a ton of upside. I just think that they're both of those guys, maybe their ceiling isn't as high. I do think that Cam Boozer probably has the highest floor of any of the players at the top end of the draft. But he's got some things that I'm concerned with too.
I continue with these, especially with these point guards. I just go back and forth, and it's really a 3-man race with some of these PGs that, man, I see one week and they're so impressive. Then I watch another game from the other guy and it's like, maybe he's better. And I'm thinking about guys like Michael Brown,
yep,
Kingston Fleming and Darius Acuff. Those 3, I mean, I'm looking at a point guard for this draft, if you're not able to get, you know, 1 or 2. And are there either one of those 3 guys that have kind of stood out to you that they all have their plus and minuses, but like, if you had an opportunity, today, because it might change from week to week, who would you go with out of those three?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched enough of each of them. I love Kingston Fleming. I just think, like, he's, you know, he's a big guard, 6'4". I like his brand of basketball. That's not to say that the others aren't going to be like higher end scoring options, because I think they probably both will be. But I do like his ability to run a team, his ability to play defense, all of that stuff. So once we get past Peterson, and I'm so leery on Darren Peterson, it's not even funny. Like, I don't know what to make of him as a prospect at all. I watching him look at Bill Self and take himself out of a game is just so shocking to me. You know, and then you watch the other guy is AJ DeBonso. You can't peel that guy off the court. It's like, you know, you're trying to drag him off the court. He's like, no, I'm staying on the court. I just don't get it. So I am very leery on Peterson as the number one pick. But I don't know that the Kings are going to land the number one pick, so it doesn't really matter. And I think he's going to go there almost assuredly, just because everyone looks at him and thinks Kobe Bryant. But I don't remember Kobe Bryant asking to come out of games and not playing in 13 or 14 games and sitting in a second half of against AJ DeBonso, because you lit DeBonso's team up in the first half. You dropped 22 on him or whatever it was. And like, all right, I showed what I got. I'm going to sit here and hang out here for the second half, played like 2 or 3 minutes. Like, those are things that are alarming to me, because I think at the end of the day, as much as all the measurables and all of the points and, you know, the raw numbers and all that stuff, like, being able to see who cares and who wants it, that matters. You know, like, you want a winner. You want somebody who not only like says they're a winner, but goes out there and actually wins and shows you that they're all about that and they're not about anything else. And again, that's the one reason why, even though I don't like, I'm watching Cam Boozer and like how again, he just doesn't look like he's in the greatest shape. Either that, or he's just a really, really slow moving player. But that dude has won everywhere he goes. Like, he won like 4 state championships or something, and he's going to win at Duke as well. And so, I'm looking at that as one of the high things that I'm looking at, especially when you're diving into a draft class that's really good. Like, who is a winner? Who wants to be here? Who wants to be part of something, but also who doesn't have an off switch and shows up every night? And that's something that I think we can start to measure here a little bit as you're watching him play.
Hammer, do you think we had an interesting discussion last week about the, say, number one, number two overall pick in the draft, a top draft prospect, and whether that has any influence on whether Doug Christie is back as the head coach next year. Do you think that it does have an impact where the Sacramento Kings are drafting, with the idea of we've got to get our coach in here to coach this player? Because if you're the number one, if it's AJ or Darren Peterson, we talked about this last week, and Hammer, you've been through this a lot. If you're the number one or number two, guess what? You're the face of the franchise. You're the savior. You're the one everyone's looking at. You're the one everyone's turning to. You're the one that we're building around. You're the focal point of all of the campaigns, the meet and greets. You're going to have the biggest rookie year, you know, the busiest rookie year of your life. Do you want, like, that guy, your coach, in there day one? Or it's like, no, we're going to continue to see what we have here with Doug Christie as our coach?
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult question. And, you know, I can't sit here and tell everybody that Doug Christie's done an amazing job at as head coach of the Kings this year. They're 12-46. You know, the coach we saw last year that finished, what, 27-24 in the final 51 games amidst like so much chaos, like whatever has happened here, it hasn't translated to this season. And I don't think that you have to let go of Doug. You know, you're in a transition year. You're in a transition 2 or 3 years where you're going to strip this thing down. But what I want to, how I'm going to grade Doug, especially over the last, you know, the post All-Star break, Like, what do the young players look like when they're given opportunity? How do you develop? And again, we're kind of, it's a bummer that Dylan Cardwell is not part of this, but I need to see what a Neat Clifford looks like between now and the end of the season. I need to see if Max Reynaud continues to throw up double doubles every single game and continues to grow and learn, become a better defender. I need to see if Keegan Murray can take a leap. These are things that I honestly think are on Doug at this point. And, you know, I'm not worried about Devin Carter, whether he's part of the program or not is still a huge question mark moving forward. But, you know, can you start to show that these guys are taking the coaching, that they're getting better, that the team itself is growing in some certain way, even if it's not amounting to wins, before I fully make a decision on what's going to happen. And like, look, we all know that this is going to be the same thing next year. Like, it's just, you're going to be 1 year closer to the end of, you know, the contracts of Zach LaVine and Malik Monk and Domantas Sabonis. So if you can't move off of these guys, you know, that might be a bigger question, Damian. It's, you know, what does this team look like if Zach LaVine isn't here next year, but you've brought in like two or three players to replace him and you were able to make some move? Can Doug take that team and lead them, or is that where you want to reset everything? But as of right now, Doug, if he wants to coach the top five pick that's going to be on this roster next year, show me you can coach the number 24 pick, the number 42 pick. Dylan Cardwell comes back, maybe him, the former number four overall pick, and Keegan Murray. Show me that you can bring those guys along and continue to show that they're taking steps in the positive direction, and that's how I'll judge.
Do you think the streak ends tonight against Memphis, at Memphis, who quietly, they're doing their own thing right now. They're doing their own thing. Do you think tonight is the night? Because if it doesn't end tonight, James, I think we're definitely seeing like low 20s at least.
I think it does end tonight.
Oh,
I'm hoping it does end tonight. Okay. Just so these guys can breathe. It's so hard playing and having this type of losing streak. And, you know, again, in my career, I haven't covered a streak this long. But like my first year covering the team, there was a stretch where they lost 7 in a row, 1-1, and then lost 8 in a row, or it was 8 in a row, 1-1, lost 7 in a row. So they lost 15 out of 16. And it just does so much damage to the psyche. You know, every single game you're having guys come out and have to talk to the media. And that's what I loved the conversation with Max we had the other night. Just like super, super smart, super analytical, but also understanding that like this isn't on him and this is part of the job. And he's learning that now to come out and talk to the media and to, you know, take one for the team. But it's a tough situation to lose this many games. And some of these players, they've never lost this many games in their entire life, let alone, you know, their college career, their high school career combined. They didn't lose 46 games total. And here they are, like, not being able to get out from underneath this heavy weight that's pushing them down.
You talk about Max there a second ago, and that was a great interaction between you guys and Maxine Reynaud. It was obviously real, and that can be refreshing at times. Do you think we've seen anything close to Max's ceiling?
No. I mean, he hasn't even been able to go out on the perimeter and shoot threes.
Is that where you think his most growth will be? Is it stretching the floor a little bit, or is it more on the defensive end?
Well, I mean, I think there's nowhere to go but up on the defensive end. He's just not good defensively at all right now, and he's got to figure that out. I think he's gotten better. And, you know, they were talking about on the broadcast how he's gained weight this season, as opposed to losing weight. Like, he's been able to bulk up during the season. They've been working hard with him. But at the end of the day, like, I think we're just seeing the first layer of him. We're basically seeing year one of Keegan, where all he did was shoot threes. But we're seeing Max, where all he does is score in the pick and roll. I think he's got a ton more game. And, like, look at his rebounding numbers. Like, he's got 10 double-doubles, and this is a guy who fell to the second round, you know, like, you get to choose your own adventure with him. Do you have him like bulk up so he becomes more of like a bigger Nikola Vucevic? Do you lean him down, keep him, you know, and try to make him into a Lauri Markkanen type player? Like, I think that there are a lot of different ways in which you can develop him, but you have to choose your path this summer and really work with him in the same way that I think that they tried to choose a path with Keegan Murray, and then the path kept changing because they couldn't figure out how to fill the other position next to him. So he kept getting pushed to the power forward spot. But, you know, like, Keegan Murray as a rookie versus Keegan Murray today, like, he's not even the same, like, remotely close defensive player. I mean, the way that he's been able to add to his lateral quickness, to his strength, to his balance is just stunning. That's what you're going to do with Max, but you have to choose a path. Do you want to bulk him up, add 15 pounds to him? Do you want to keep him lean and have him be a you know, 4 or 5 combo? So yeah, lots of decisions to make.
Kenny hates him.
Who's that?
You. You hate Maxine Raynaud?
Not at all. I really do like Max. I really do. I hope all that happens.
I feel like you're a little tough on him. And that's why I wanted James' perspective. I feel like he, I don't know how much, that's why I was trying to get a feel for like if the Kenny Caraway, I don't think he's close to a ceiling, but I don't know that he's like a all NBA player. Mm-hmm. I think you think this is him. And that's where I'm not there either. I'm just trying to get a feel for what people think Max could do more of moving forward.
Well, he wasn't this player at the college level. He was a stretch 5 at the college level. Mm-hmm. I mean, he shot a ton of 3-point shots. And I think he's going to do that at the pro level as well. And I also, when I see him make those bounce passes to Malik cutting baseline, like, where is that? Because they've been reluctant to run anything through him. And if they're going to start putting in sets that allow him to create more for others, like, I don't know what he's got, but I'm here for it because he's not a selfish player. And he certainly, like, he's got a ton of skill around the basket. Does he have to get better as, you know, a shot blocker or as a defensive player? Yeah. I mean, he clearly has to get better as a defensive player, but also, like, you know, there's still moldable clay there. And again, the analytical mind that he has. I even like that he dropped in a belt to ass. That was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And then apologized for that after, just so you guys know, he apologized for saying that. He got a little heated and then had media relations come back and say, hey, he didn't mean to say that. It's like, it's okay, man. You did. It was pretty clear. You got smacked around.
Again.
Yeah. No, I really do like Max's game. I just think the things that led to him being a second rounder have shown to be true in the NBA, and I don't know how that improves. And what I say by that is he was a poor defender, and he was soft against more physical competition, and he wasn't
He's gotten better in that second regard about being softer, because that was really noticeable in summer league. Like, the first time he stepped on the floor, it was like, oh, okay. You're going to have to fix that.
Yeah.
You think he's gotten better?
A little bit.
I do. Like, yeah. I do think he's gotten better in that, which plays to the, if he gets on the floor, plays minutes, like, there's, mm-hmm. he's going to need off seasons. You know what I mean? He's going to need coaches and things like that. But his time on the floor, I feel like, has done him well.
The one thing he does defensively that I do like is, oddly enough, he guards on the perimeter decent. Like,
yeah.
Decent. Like, he does a decent job. He's not locked down or nothing like that, but he does a decent job. Where I see a problem with him is just, I think he's a little soft around the basket defensively. And, like, in certain switch situations or pick and rolls, when the guy's going downhill, it's barbecue chicken, whether it's a big guy scoring on him or a guard or something like that. Like, he's got no shot. And those are the things that I'm not banking on improving drastically. I think they'll improve with just being around the league more and more experience, but he's not going to turn into, and I'm not saying anybody's saying he will, but he's not going to turn into Jalen Duren out there. Like, that's just not who he is. I think he can show more of his shooting ability that he showed in college and a little bit in the summer league, and I hope that finds its way into his game as next year goes.
Yeah, I would say this. Like, we think that, you know, again, he wasn't a great rebounder in college, and he was okay. But here he is at the pro level. He's second amongst the draft class in rebounds. And I know you said it's what made him fall to the second round. Okay, if we were to redraft this year's draft, where would he go? Top 12?
I think he'd go first round.
Yeah, he'd probably go first
mid,
round.
Yeah.
Mid first round?
Yeah.
Yeah,
top 12,
I mean,
top 15? 12
to 15. Yeah, I mean, that'd be mid. Yeah, 12 to 15.
Yeah, and again, I think your perspective of him would change, because right now it's a good story because he's a 42nd pick in the draft. He's averaging 10 and 7. Like, if he was the ninth pick in the draft, you're like, oh boy, like Spencer Haas 2.0, right? Mm. But the fact that he's a second round pick, can he get better? Yeah, I think he can get better. And I don't even care that he's a little bit older prospect, because clearly, you know, you talk to him and you look at what he was able to accomplish at Stanford. He wasn't just a basketball player. A lot of these guys are just basketball players at the college level. Like, Max Reynaud was a lot more than that. He has a degree in mathematics and computer science, if I'm not mistaken. And like, this is a bright kid who is much more than just a basketball player. And I kind of want to see how he develops with, now that it's his full-time job. So
great,
he's impressive.
Stuff. He is. And of the young prospects, he's the one that I like the most. And that's probably pretty universal. No,
I like Dylan the most.
Oh, Dylan. That's
I
right.
Think, Dylan I think Dylan. Man.
That's right. I forgot. Cause not season ending, but he's gone too. I forget that.
I think Dylan, what he does translates to a 10-year career.
Yeah,
I'm so confused by you, Kenny, because you typically just love the scores.
You guys don't.
Yeah, you don't
to
care
me.
If they play a lick of defense, but if they score,
not true.
You're all over.
Not true at all. Not true at all. You guys just don't listen to me. There's a lot of defenders that I love, but I think that in basketball, I realize you do have to score to win.
Well, I think you're right. We just don't listen to you. We'll come back. That we got to weed through the impressions, and every once in a while, we'll find out Kenny likes a defender. Hammer, great stuff as always, man. Thanks for making time for us, and we'll check you out over on the Locked On Kings podcast and see you coming up on Wednesday.
Sounds good.
That's our man, James Ham, right there as we wrap up the marathon. 60 minutes of commercial-free sports talk, but no need to wrap up the conversation. Because that boy had another performance over the weekend. Now, the stage is going to Darren Peterson tonight. We'll talk about A.J. DeBonsta. We'll talk about more potential draft picks for the Sacramento Kings. And someone of strong influence said, y'all need to chill off Darren Peterson a little bit. We'll talk about that. Medilla and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320. Getting text messages that are... Middle schooler has a dance in April.
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
It's interesting because that's the one who is closest to me. Like, when I'm home, she is my, like, we're attached. Like, very literally. It drives Katie crazy. Like, we are attached at the hip, and it's been that way, honest to God, since the moment we met. And Katie always goes, you know, you can tell her to like move. like yesterday I did TV with Brandon. Came downstairs, they had already ate. I was like, you guys go ahead, I'll come down and catch up. And so I grabbed my plate today, man. I went and sat next to Katie, and here comes Audrey, and she's just right next to me right as I'm eating. And she gets up, and Katie goes, why don't you just tell her to move? I go, because one day she's not going to want to be around me anymore. One day she's going to want to. And it's like, man, she's going to turn 13 next year. That day is going to be soon.
Yeah.
And so she just texted. She was like, hey, just wanted to let you know there's a dance in April.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
And she wants to go. So it's like, the other one's go, like, she's got senior prom. It's like, yeah, cool. Dress. No, we went and got the dress. Like, that's nothing. But this one. Oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
I used to have those moments where Reese used to talk my ear off.
JT says, so D-Lo will be at the dance.
He used to talk our ear off and all this other stuff, and I'd be like, same thing. Like, one day you're not going to want to talk to us.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just answer all the questions, not be annoyed and all this other stuff. And we're about at that time. We ain't really got too much to say to us.
Yeah.
So that's what it is, man. Enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had a little discussion during the break.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking more about Maxine Raynaud and all this other stuff. And people, like they tend to do, tend to get upset mm-hmm. when I don't look at
that's right.
Kings players
that's right.
the way the that they look ever. At them. Have I, just for point of reference, we've talked about Maxine a lot. Have I ever said I do not like his game?
No, that was a no.
Oh, I wasn't even talking like that, but like,
oh, no,
have I ever said
that? No, you definitely have not.
I ever said that, get him out of here.
No, you have not Devin Carter'd him.
I've said a few different times that finding Maxine Raynaud in the second round
mm-hmm.
and seeing that he is a capable NBA player, and Dylan Carwell, finding him undrafted and seeing that he is a capable NBA player as well, that is a rare, some would say, win for Scott Perry this year. Like,
sure.
He found those guys, and they can play. Like, they're in there.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, super definitive right now, but I don't think Maxine Raynaud is a starting center on a championship contending team. And that's kind of what I'm thinking about. Like, can Maxine Raynaud start and play center on this team? Sure. Like, yeah, can he put up 16 and 9 and not play defense and be capable? Absolutely. But when we're talking about building a team and doing more, I'm like, is this the guy? Does he do the things that I'm thinking more so defensively? Does he do enough on the defensive end to be your starting guy when you're really trying to be really good? I haven't seen enough yet to feel that he is. Maybe he improves a whole lot,
mm-hmm.
but I don't look at him as the starting center. He's still on the team. He's still in the rotation. I still want him getting 20 minutes a night.
You're contractually obligated to believe that he is the greatest thing that has ever happened to the Sacramento Kings.
Guys in the chat, Pillar says, KC, you're saying all Kings players' stats are empty since they haven't won all year. No, that's not necessarily the case. That's not how I feel. And here's another thing about it. I tend to go with a couple of different factors. I use the numbers, but I also use the eye test.
Mm-hmm.
I use my gut feeling on that. Are all of them an exact science? Absolutely not. But I look at the numbers, and the numbers are great for Maxine Raynaud, but I'm still leery about his defense.
Mm-hmm.
He has that, like, he'll be the type of player for me when I watch the games where I'll be like, man, Max kind of getting pushed around. Like, he ain't really, he hasn't made his presence felt in the paint. Like, it's kind of non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll look up and he's got 8 rebounds. Like, when did he get 8 rebounds?
Mm-hmm.
I can't dispute he's that active. He got 8 rebounds. I can't dispute that. But when I'm watching it sometimes, it's like it feels like I haven't seen him get a rebound in 2 quarters. You know what I mean? And sometimes that happens. Sometimes, even to that translation, you got to go away from the eye test sometimes and be like, look, he's actually doing this. So I know you may feel a certain way, but he's got a legit 7-8 rebounds here halfway through the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to step away from what you feel the eye test or your gut feeling is. It's all, for me at least, when I evaluate these players, it's all related. It's not just stats. It's not just eye test. It's not just gut feeling. They all kind of get intertwined.
I think Max is really good. I'm not the best at judging like how far can a player go. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never been great at that. So I just try to watch these guys, hope they develop, hope, like, what is a realistic expectation for some of these players. Like, I always thought my expectations for Keegan Murray were realistic because I felt like I saw enough of it to believe, like, why is it outlandish to think he can be a 20-point-per-game scorer? Like, that seems like something he can do with relative ease. I'm not so sure about that anymore. So it's clear that is just not my forte, but I just look at Max and I watch him and I go, he's still such a raw, he's such a young NBA talent, right? Again, he's not a 19-year-old, he's not an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old, But in terms of his time in the league in this game of professional basketball, he's still very young in it. And I was like, man, if you just get a little better at this, marginally better at that, and if you could really improve there, mm-hmm. it's a really good basketball player. And I don't know if really good basketball player means, he's a starting center on this team and you try to build up the other positions around him, the small forward position, the guard position, if you try to do that, or if he's just a really solid player to have in your rotation and you have a higher caliber center. Like, I don't know. Centers aren't, like, cut and dry anymore, right? Mm-hmm. There's, you know, even, you know, your bigs who, like, rebound and they're high volume scorers like Joel Embiid. Then you've got the Jokic situation and the Sabonis situation where you do so much with your offense through those centers. Even Vucevic falls into that to a certain degree. Like, that position is just so different, and it feels like, or more, so much more different than it used to be, where it feels like the more you can do at that spot, the better. And Max can do a lot of those things, mm-hmm. which is why every time I catch glimpses of him, it's like, man, there's something. Mm-hmm. It's just, can he do those things that you're talking about? That he's not, can he do those things? Can he become
right.
better at those, you know, different parts of his game?
Right. And I hope that he can. And usually when I look at guys like Maxine, I say, hey, worst case scenario, say he doesn't. He's already good. Like, he's already good enough to play consistent minutes. You know what I mean? I'm looking at it worst case scenario. Say he doesn't improve that much at all. Maybe the shot doesn't show itself the way it did in college or in summer league, and he's kind of this type of player offensively. Say he doesn't make an impact on the defensive end and grow in that respect. Worst case scenario, he's still a really good ball player.
Yeah.
He's still somebody that should be getting minutes night in and night out.
He is the best young player on this team, right?
We don't look at Keegan as young anymore.
No.
Isn't he about the same age as Max? I think Max is 22.
They're all 30. Well, I mean,
Keegan's young, right?
Keegan's like a super not young. Senior. Keegan's 24.
He's not
right?
young, but he's not old. I think he's 24.
Keegan's a vet down there right now.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, Keegan's a vet. He might be pushing 25.
He's getting ready to go into his second contract. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess he is. I don't know. I guess he is.
To answer your question, yeah, I think he is.
I know you like Dylan.
I love Dylan.
It's been a few days.
Well, yes, no. You haven't seen him.
That's a good point. Also, you've been near death. Like, that sentence probably has been difficult to say.
I love this. This is always the interesting thing about when I speak about basketball. Dylan Carwell, if I was the Kings, if I was an NBA GM right now, mm-hmm. I would look for centers that resemble Dylan Carwell. Maybe a little bit more to Maxime Reynaud. Right now, the way the game is played with a bunch of threes and it's all spread out and all this other stuff, I just need my center to rebound, defend, and finish around the rim. I've got four other guys now because you got stretch fours and shooting guards and point guard. I got all these guys all over the place that can score. I need somebody that can protect the paint. Jalen Duren is a perfect example. Like, he would be outside of, you know, Embiid, Jokic, those guys.
Sure.
He would be the prototypical center I would want to draft and I would want on my team in 2026. He's physical. He's athletic. He can rebound. He can block
shots. So what would
you
put around him?
Put shooters.
Just, okay.
Shooters and, like, more perimeter defenders, obviously. But the other four guys on the on that starting lineup, those would be the guys I would look at to be creators and on all this other stuff. I need a guy almost like how Rob Williams was when he was in his prime with the Celtics. Like, he was a game changer. They ain't call no plays for him.
Yeah.
It was just rim run, alley-oop.
Protect the rim. Catch this lob.
And all of a sudden we're championship contenders because we got these guys around him.
Yeah.
Also with that too comes with, you don't have to pay those guys a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Duren's probably going to get a lot of money, though.
Yeah, Jalen
but,
Duren.
You know, you can find them a number of different places within the draft. And, you know, you can kind of find those guys, I don't want to say anywhere, but you can find that type of production. Daniel Gafford isn't a guy that, you know, was highly touted, but he fit into a role with a certain team around him, and he was unbelievably effective. So that's the way the game is played this nowadays. That's the kind of guy I want. Now, I'm also a little old school where I don't think they throw the ball into the block and let the big guy go to work as much anymore. I think they need to do a little bit more of that.
I'm going to need you to make up your mind, pal. 916-909-1320. Not only is that ESPN 1320 Mojo's local tap and kitchen studio text line, it's also the phone lines. TC, what's going on, baby?
Yes, sir. What's up with my two brothers?
What's up, TC? How you doing, man? You have a good weekend?
Man, it was a good weekend, man. Hey, I hope the homies had a good weekend. I know you bounced back, bro. You sounding back, and it's all gravy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, so like I told the homies this morning, right? I'm sticking to that, bro. Our boys get number one, man. The pick is AJ, right? I'm going to stick to that. If that's the pick. As far as Hayes, I'm not going to – listen, y'all know that's me. I get on here, and I'll be going crazy, but – bro is only like 25, 6'4". What is he, Kenny? What, 6'4", 6'5", or am I tripping? A taller point guard. He been in the league already. Was a former, what, 7th-round pick. Not saying that he going to be an all-star, but that can be one of them, them birds. You kill a bird with a stone, right? That could be one of them ones. D-Lo, give me a minute, Casey. D-Lo, I know you don't like that term, but it's a madness behind my – listen to me. He could be that guard that we need, right? We've been searching for a point guard. He could probably fill that shoe, and that would make that much easier when we're trying to fill out the roster, if that makes sense. You get me? Not saying that we got Hayes. This guy's going to go to all-star, all-NBA, average 20 inch. No, bro. I'm talking about a serviceable starting point guard that we need on this team that can help us fill out the roster moving forward, and he's young enough. That's all I got, bro. Just think about it.
Okay. All right, stop killing birds, man. Between you and, I mean, Jesse's got a fear of birds. KC out here killing them. TC throwing stones at them.
Yeah, I didn't two birds, too. He's just taking one stone for the one bird.
Yeah, relax. I didn't kill no birds. I didn't do nothing.
Bro, how many birds died on your property in 2023? Or four.
Has there been more years of us on the show or animals dead at your house?
Great question.
More years of us on the show.
Are you positive?
How close is that number, though?
I'm pretty sure.
It's close enough for him to
drop. Now we got like three birds and a squirrel mixed in maybe a frog or something like that.
It was a frog. That's right.
Well, the frog didn't die. I just got him out the garage.
Well, yeah, that's what you said about the squirrel, too. You got the squirrel out of the garage.
That's another way. He didn't die.
I'm sorry. I'm counting the squirrels at that.
Why? Yeah. Why? He was alive when he left the garage.
You severed his spine.
That's not true. I don't know if that was his spine or not.
You took out his legs and then sent him out to the ocean. Man. Like a mob boss.
I can't believe PETA hasn't got to the show yet. Unbelievable.
Because I love animals.
No.
I do love animals. I just don't need them as pets.
Well, all right. That's a whole other discussion.
What? I don't need them as pets.
No, it's fine. You don't have to have them.
I love animals, though. I love them. I love their life, except for alligators.
We need to start Casey out with a fish.
Nah, Reese had one of those at one time.
Had? How long did it last?
Not a day.
Really? We're not talking about the school fish.
It didn't last.
You went at the school fair.
I don't know what happened. I have no idea. We gave the proper amount of food. When we got it.
I want to be clear. You're one day.
Yeah, man. That was crazy.
All right.
Yeah.
You are never beating these allegations. You had a fish for a day? That's...
Now, this was a long time ago. This wasn't even at this house. This was in L.A.
Oh, so I guess it doesn't count. Oh, yeah.
Well, if it was in L.A., we're all good then.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't count as a pet death as long as it happened in Southern California. As long as it's south of Bakersfield, we're fine.
That's the line of demarcation.
As long as it's south of Bakersfield, it doesn't count. Let's go. Let's grab Leezy real quick. I see Leezy right there. Let's see what he's talking about here at 916-909-1320. What's up, Leezy?
Yo, Jesse from the jump. What's up with it?
What up, Leezy? What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, kinfolk? Hey, man, best part of my day, calling into my favorite show. You feel me?
I hear you.
No doubt.
Yes, sir. Hey, but anyways, now I'm going to get to my take. Hey, KC, I got a question, man, because we're talking about the draft, and I'm still one of your lines, man. Okay. Is it Uchi Wally Wally, or is it one Mike? Because with Darren Peterson, one day it's, hey, I got this injury, I got to sit out. Then the next day people are saying, hey, he's just concerned about his draft and where he's going and this and that. Either way, it's a red flag for me. If this guy's really that hurt, I wouldn't want to be taking him that high. And if he's not hurt and he's just concerned about, you know, his money or whatever he's worried about, it's just a bad look. So basically, I'm just giving y'all my analysis real quick. I still want AJ, and if I could, I would still try to move Keegan in that first round, if possible. But, you know, I just want to tap in with my brother, see what...
Leezy, let me ask you a question before you leave.
Yeah.
You hear me? Do you know...
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Do you know any of these things to be what's going on with Darren Peterson?
No, but that's what I'm saying. If he's really that hurt and he's sitting out that much because he's hurt, isn't that a red flag?
I mean, wouldn't it be a situation where the guy's tough and he's trying to play through injury? Why do you look at it that way?
I don't know. It's just about, look, he's too young to be having these type of injuries, man. He ain't 34, man. Like, he's a kid, man. He shouldn't be that hurt.
Okay.
And if he's... I just don't think it's a good look, Casey. I'd rather stick with AJ, who's been kind of proven at this point in college.
Okay, fair enough. I just think a lot of projection going on.
It's almost as if Leezy is following the producer manual of the show here because Jay Billis appeared on these airwaves.
Yeah.
With Jesse's very good friend, Rich Eisen.
Call me back, Rich.
Won't answer my calls, but call me back, I guess.
Still, good friends.
Shout out to Rich.
Talking about that very subject that Leezy was just talking about. Here's Jay Billis.
My thing, Rich, is if Darren Peterson were really getting advice from people about shutting it down would be the easy way to go, and the NBA would take him number one. You know, trying to play is what's causing, you know, these speculative issues about his character and all that other stuff. I don't find it fair. But, you know, if we had solid information that said so, then I'm good with it. But I think it's been a little bit unfair. And the kid doesn't talk. Like, he may do a little press event or something like that, but he really doesn't talk much. And, you know, look, if he were listening to me, I'd say the more you talk, the more people will know you. And he never had this problem in high school. Nobody ever questioned his competitiveness. But, man, when that dude plays, there is not much question. There are not many like him. He is the real deal.
Well,
again, that's courtesy of our coworker, our very good friend. Jesse's very good friend.
Call Jesse back, Rich.
Yeah, shout out Rich. Call me back.
Jay Billis isn't really one to blow smoke.
Mm-hmm.
I know not everybody is a Jay Billis fan. I very much am. His words hold weight to me. There is an easy way that he could do this that would essentially assure he's the number one overall pick in the draft. And he's not doing it. I do have concerns thinking about Bill Self. I do have concerns about what exactly is going on with him.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with Leezy. I disagree with Hammer's, you know, the idea that he just doesn't want to play or he's, you know, subbing himself out and it's just because he's done for the day and he's clocked my hours, I'm out of here. Like, I think there is something to be concerned about, but until someone says it's something you need to be really concerned about, it's something they got to get a hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's causing this? He's having an issue or issues. What are they?
Yeah.
And we alluded to maybe there is a mental block with him knowing what's ahead coming up here in the next couple of months, knowing he had the hamstring issue, knowing any cramp, any lower extremity that fills off, it's like, hey, what is that? What's that? Hey, something happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, Darren, it's good. Like, it's just part of being an athlete. Or, no, there is something wrong. We need to address this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm looking at a lot of other people, to be honest with you, before I'm looking at Darren Peterson. I'm looking at Kansas's medical staff. I'm looking at all the, like, hey, you've got a $10 million athlete here. Like, you'd be in everybody's best interest for you to figure out what's going on here.
Right.
And yeah. I don't know if I got to imagine they're trying, but I just don't understand.
Yeah, I just, you know, I hear the discourse around Darren Peterson, and it's just a lot of projection of and, you know, people have their opinions, and that's fine too. But it, for me personally, I'll say I don't know. I don't going on. I don't know, you know.
It's not popular to say on sports talk, but it if everyone was being honest with themselves, they don't.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on. It does look weird for sure, but at the same time, like Jay Billis said, if he wanted to protect his value, he would just shut it down. He would have shut it down a month ago and still been the number one pick in the draft, if that's what it was. Like, it's always interesting how, like I said with Leezy just a second ago, him playing hurt and, you know, playing in a half and then pulling himself out is always looked at as he doesn't want to play basketball, as opposed to he's trying to work through an injury. He's trying to play. Like, if it was right today, if this happened right now, and I understand there's a more of a sample size of AJ playing all the games, so that has something to do with it.
Yeah.
But if AJ had a hamstring injury and started doing the minutes thing the same way Darren Peterson is, look at this warrior. He just wants to be out there. He's just giving him everything he can for the team. Because the perception has already been laid out that way. I don't know what's going on with Darren Peterson. I will say this, though. This is just what I believe. The people who say he doesn't want to play basketball. My personal opinion, watching him play, not only this year, but watching him a little bit in high school, you are not that good with not wanting to play basketball. I know we talk all the time about people who are tall, and they're like, well, I'll just play basketball because this works out for me. Like, I can make a lot of money doing it this way. Ben Simmons fits that category. He ended up being 6'10", and you see that a lot with centers and stuff like that. Not with guards. Not with guys that are, at least in my experience, 6'5", and shorter.
Sure. Because you don't really stumble upon, oh, I'm great at basketball.
Yeah.
And unique.
Yeah.
And at this size.
And to be that skilled, sure, like his shooting, his movement, you don't do that unless you like the game.
Yeah.
Unless you love the game, to be honest with you. Because that takes a lot of work to get to where he's at right now. And
it's like you brought up Ben Simmons. I think Ben Simmons likes basketball. I think we've conditioned ourselves to believe that professional athletes love, I think we've conditioned ourselves to believe every athlete is Kobe Bryant. And like, all they think about is basketball and, or that particular sport. And all they think about is how they're going to get better and be great and don't play video games, get in the playbook and things like that. When in actuality, that's not the case. And Ben Simmons will always be the greatest example to me.
Yeah.
And he showed us that from jump. I always talk about that documentary, that Showtime documentary. It was crystal clear. He does not love this, but he's good at it, and he's going to make it doesn't mean he's not going to work at it. It just means, you know, we talked about all these things with Maxine Raynaud earlier and how you're going to get better and do this. He's not going to do those. He's going to be sharp and play and do all of that, but he's not going to do that stuff because that's different. The stuff that Darren Peterson can do, again, that's not stuff, to your point, and this was a great point, you don't just stumble across that. Oh, look at that. I can move at a speed that other people can. Okay, right. You can stumble. Oh, I can shoot from here. I could shoot from here. Oh, I can jump. Yeah. Oh, I'm getting compared to Kobe Bryant. Oh, that happens to everybody. Right.
That's a level of skill that is just some of it. Like, you look at guys like you know, Allen Iverson. I saw a video from Steve Francis. It was his birthday the other day. And I can't imagine those guys were just in the gym getting their 500 shots up every day. Like, some of it is just God-given. Like, you're just unbelievably fast, handle. They played a lot of pickup ball or something like that, and they can do all that stuff. But the precision and the skill and the movement, the footwork, everything that he has that has people thinking about Kobe Bryant, and you know how many hours, how much work you have to put in to have that to muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he loves the game. I dismiss that notion. But once again, like we talked about, I don't know what's going on in Kansas. I have no idea. I said last week.
Well, I know I'm still taking Houston tonight.
Yeah, I'm taking them number one, but it looks strange. It does look strange. I get it.
AJ DeBonta had 29, 10, and 9.
That does not look strange. That looks spectacular.
BYU's 10-point win against Iowa State. I think this was yesterday.
Saturday night. Yeah.
Saturday, thank you. In the last five games, he's gone for 29, 35, 20, 36, 28. He's had double-digit rebounds twice in that stretch of games and 7-plus assists three different times.
Hey,
I missed the break by like 3 minutes. That's my bad. We'll step out. Goodness. Right? Are we supposed to break? We are supposed to break.
It's 58, man.
I'm new here, pal. I'm new here. We'll come back. Stilo and KC. And don't worry. I know the Kings game starts in an hour. Don't worry. We're not doing play-by-play, but trust me.
We got you.
We got you.
We're back here on the NFHS Network.
That's it. CSP at 1320.